This is DW News coming to you live from Berlin. The biggest show of dissent Lebanon has seen in decades. Hundreds of thousands turn out for the fourth day of protests over tax hikes and corruption. Some are calling for a revolution against the embattled government. Also coming up, Boris Johnson promises to deliver Brexit in 10 days' time. Conservative lawmakers say he's got the numbers to get his deal passed. So, what stands in the way of a vote? Plus, recent scandals have dampened re-election prospects for Canada's sunny Prime Minister. Justin Trudeau is in a close race against a Conservative challenger as Canada votes today in national polls. And in the Bundesliga, it's getting crowded at the top after Schalke lose and miss their chance to seize first place. Hello, I'm Terry Martin. Welcome to the program. Calls for change are ringing out in the streets of Lebanon as the wave of dissent continues there. For four consecutive days, hundreds of thousands of people have taken to the streets in protest against the government. A rollout of new taxes triggered the outcry. The government has since backtracked, but that hasn't stopped the spread of public discontent.
Protesters gather for a fourth day of demonstrations. Sunday drew the largest crowd yet. All over Lebanon, anger at a corrupt political class and an ineffective government has reached boiling point.
These ministers and legislators should be thrown in jail. They're thieves. They were borrowing money from other countries on behalf of the Lebanese, but then put it in their own pockets.
This government has done nothing but divide us, as well as making us poor. Citizens must retain their dignity. This is why we won't leave the streets without taking down the regime and forming a transitional government with exceptional powers to rebuild the country.
People can't afford it anymore. There are no good schools, no electricity and no water. Basic needs in Lebanon are not being met, and these are the demands of each person here.
What began as a protest over proposed tax hikes turned into demand for sweeping change. High unemployment, poor public services, and a soaring government debt have united Lebanon's diverse religious sects in protest. Prime Minister Saad Hariri on Friday promised far-reaching reforms, but he was put under further pressure when Lebanon's Christian leader went on air and announced the withdrawal of his party from government.
The party has decided to ask their ministers to resign from government. And to insist on our demand to form a new government, far away from the current majority of ministers.
Late on Sunday, reports emerged that the governing coalition had agreed on a reform package that would slash government wages, cut the budget deficit, and overhaul the electricity sector. The embattled Hariri will hope that the reforms satisfy those calling for change on the streets.
Our correspondent Basil Aridi is in Beirut and joins us now. Basil, the government there is promising to address at least some of the protesters' grievances. Are the demonstrators going to be satisfied with that?
No, not really, not really. Right now, all the roads into Beirut and from Beirut are closed. And in all major cities in Lebanon, also the protesters closed the roads by burning tires. So it's what it seems that in this morning as well, we're going to have the cabinet meeting at the presidential palace. All the roadway to the presidential palace are closed by the military forces, LAF, I mean, Lebanese armed forces, and ISF, internal security forces. They are closed all the surrounding areas for the presidential palace with heavy security measures. The cabinet meeting will take place in that palace, but as it seems for today or for right now, that all the protesters, they are not agreed and they are not satisfied by all measures and reform packages made by the government and which are about to be announced in the next few hours.
What is known about the reforms that the government is promising at this point? What can you tell us about those?
One of the major points in these reforms that the banking sector gonna take part of these reforms and pay around more than $3 billion. These, as well as they're gonna have some salary reduction to the MPs, member of parliaments, and ministers, current ones and the former ones. All these reforms, the protesters and Lebanese people, they asked for it since long ago, years ago. But they didn't, the government didn't take any action until now, when all these protests took place in the streets of Lebanon. So all these reforms, the protesters now, they are asking for the government resignation to be resigned and to be replaced by a technocratic government. So because they are now, they lose all their trust with all these political,
I was just wanted to ask you that given that kind of pressure on the government and that we've seen already four ministers resign over the weekend, can this government survive?
Yeah. It can survive, we can say. In general speaking, yes, it can survive. But according to the circumstances and what's going to happen next, this is the main question and the major question now in Lebanon. All the local newspapers in Lebanon now, they said that the country is in a crossroad, whether to go with the real reforms or we're going to get to abyss. So generally speaking, the headlines of the local newspapers. So what's going to be next? This related to what the government going to do, what the government can announce today. And the protesters in one of the major squares in downtown Beirut, they're going to have a giant screen to follow up all the news coming out from the cabinet meeting.
Okay, and we'll be following that, of course, very closely with your help. Basil Aridi in Beirut, thank you so much.
Thank you, Teddy.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will make a fresh attempt to win parliamentary backing for his last-ditch Brexit deal after another defeat on Saturday. Despite promises that he wouldn't, Johnson was forced to request a delay to Brexit after MPs postponed taking up his proposed deal to exit the European Union. But government wants to hold a so-called meaningful vote on the deal, though it will be up to the Speaker of the Commons whether a vote can go ahead. DW's Barbara Wiesel is following all the twists and turns in London and Brussels. She joins us now from London. Barbara, Boris Johnson is not giving up, it seems. What do you make of those around him who say that he can still get Brexit done by October 31st?
Now, he would say that, Terry, wouldn't he? And his people, of course, came out over the weekend and said, yes, we have the numbers. One wonders whether they really counted, because British newspapers spent all of Sunday sort of calculating up and down and looking at spreadsheets of which parliamentarian might sort of bend this way or that way and turn. And so today they say it is too close to call. If somebody, just one single person in the House of Parliament, and there behind us would change his or her mind overnight, it might still go the other way. But it is all in the hands of Mr. Speaker, John Bercow, the man who yells order so compellingly. He will decide whether the government can bring the same motion again. It did so on Saturday and it was thwarted. And if they want to do it again today, Bercow said to Theresa May half a year ago, you can't just have Parliament vote till you like the result. So he might not allow it. Everything then will be pushed back till tomorrow. And Boris Johnson's plans will really be derailed then.
So the suspense continues in London. Where does this leave Brussels, Barbara? Are EU leaders inclined to give the UK another extension on Brexit?
I mean, in the end, despite of all the tough talk of Emmanuel Macron and Jean-Claude Juncker and some other people, they will, of course. They're not going to be the party sort of pushing Britain over the brink, would they, under no circumstances. So they might be really, really exasperated. They might be looking at the spectacle with ever-increasing disbelief and lack of understanding. But in the end, of course, they will do it. They are taking their time, however. They're leaving Britain to sort of stew in its own juices all through this week. And only next week, like 2 or 3 days before the Brexit date, will they then say, OK, if it's not going to work out, we'll just give you another 3 months. But for heaven's sake, get on with it.
What about efforts to hold another referendum, Barbara? We're seeing momentum for that growing among British voters, but is that momentum also building in the British Parliament?
Slowly, because what the opposition and the rebel forces are now trying to do first, that is throughout the week, is sort of slap amendments on the withdrawal bill that would enact and implement Brexit domestically. And they can do that. And so there might be support, for instance, to force Boris Johnson into a customs union, support for a much softer Brexit. And in the end, then there might also be, this is a process going from day to day. In the end, there might then be the support to say, we cannot resolve this politically. We just need to ask the people again. Even some leavers, some people who have supported Brexit now say it needs to go back to the people because we're just running in circles.
Barbara, thank you very much for that update. DW's Barbara Basil in London. Now to some of the other stories making headlines around the world today. Australia's major newspapers have published redacted front pages in a coordinated campaign to protest against laws that restrict press freedom. This follows federal police raids earlier this year on the national broadcaster ABC and a News Corp journalist's home over two stories that had proved embarrassing for the government. There have been more violent protests in Chile, despite the government announcing the suspension of a controversial metro fare hike. At least two airlines have canceled flights to Santiago, which has been put on a state of emergency. Officials report 7 people are dead in fires related to the unrest. And following elections in Switzerland, the right-wing People's Party remains the strongest force in parliament despite a slip in support. Green opposition parties made unexpectedly large gains. Because of the country's unique electoral system, it remains unclear, though, whether the Greens will become part of the government, which Parliament will vote for in December. A ballot count in Bolivia shows left-wing President Evo Morales in the lead following Sunday's vote, but it might not be enough for an outright win. A runoff may be necessary come mid-December. Morales is seeking an unprecedented fourth term and faced a tough race. Despite getting credit for lifting millions out of poverty, critics accuse him of corruption and anti-democratic rule. Morales voiced confidence that he would ultimately be the winner.
For more than 13 years, our political movement has presented social and professional progress in several sectors, in the face of a right-wing opposition that wanted to go back to the past. They failed. Well, we went ahead with our process of change, and we are going to continue with it.
Canadians head to the polls today, and it could be a nail-biter for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. His campaign has been overshadowed by a series of errors that have raised allegations of racism and ethics violations. Recent polls show Trudeau's Liberals in a virtual dead heat with the Conservatives, and that could be good news for smaller parties like the left-leaning New Democratic Party.
In the lead-up to Canada's elections, it's been all but a smooth ride for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. His approval ratings dropped to almost record lows, and his Liberal Party is engaged in a neck-and-neck race with the Conservatives. Both are polling around 30%. Despite a strong economy and low unemployment, Trudeau's popularity dipped after a series of scandals, like this old photo of Trudeau wearing blackface, or his violation of conflict of interest rules. During the last weeks of campaigning, Trudeau has been trying to make up for his missteps, often attacking his main opponent, the Conservative Party.
Here's the question you have to ask yourself. Do you want $53 billion worth of Conservative cuts? Or do you want a progressive government that will continue investing in families and investing in communities? That's the choice. It's that simple. And it's that important.
But Trudeau's attacks aren't the only worry of Conservative leader Andrew Scheer. He is also quite unpopular, according to the polls. In one of the closest races in recent years, both the Conservatives and the Liberals may not win a big enough majority to govern alone. This is where Jagmeet Singh, leader of the left-leaning New Democratic Party, could come into play. With approval ratings soaring for his party, Singh could become the kingmaker of Canada's election as a prospective partner in a Liberal minority government.
You're watching DW News. Still to come, find out why it's becoming really tight in the Bundesliga. We ask if it's now the most competitive league in Europe. Protesters in Hong Kong have defied an official ban and staged more pro-democracy rallies, some turning violent. Tensions have spiked again after a protest leader and another activist were violently assaulted earlier this week.
Protests went on into the night, defying a ban by police. As has happened multiple times, under the cover of darkness, chaos descended. A DW reporter and her cameraman were confronted by riot police. Authorities had forbidden the rally in a high-end shopping district. Some protesters said they were there simply to check out the merchandise.
I'm just walking on the street, shopping. I'm not joining any protest. I'm not dating for anyone. Just personally walk down on the street. You know, because Hong Kong is not allowed this time of protest.
The stakes seem to be rising. Sunday's violence follows the stabbing and beating of two pro-democracy protesters this week. Demonstrators targeted mainland Chinese-owned shops and banks and reserved their anger for the city's chief executive, Carrie Lam, who many see as a Chinese puppet.
Our governor, never listen to us. She just wants to do what she likes. If we don't come out today, maybe someday later, we can't even go out. So I come out and say no to our government. She is so bad.
With passions running high, demonstrators seem to be in no mood to back down anytime soon.
The United States is struggling to get an opioid crisis under control. More than 400,000 people have died. Millions more are addicted. Now, a landmark trial will decide whether the pharmaceuticals industry should help pay for the crisis. DW's Alexandra Fennaman reports from Maryland about how the opioid epidemic is impacting people's lives.
Just take it out the box, hold your thumb on the bottom of the plunger, and press one time in whichever nostril you prefer.
They're learning how to use Narcan, a nasal spray that can help reverse an opioid overdose. First responders, social workers, family members, people on the front lines of America's opioid crisis. The health department recommends the training to anyone working with the public.
We're trying to target the mandate community to get them Narcan, and I know for sure, for a fact, we have saved several lives just putting this in the hands of those who need it.
Brian Oberly completed the training, but he tells me he never expected to need it here in his library. But he did. When a visitor with symptoms of an overdose was discovered in the restroom, the librarian used Narcan to save his life.
We've never had anyone cross this line before. We've had to call ambulances before, we call the police sometimes, but we've never had anyone fully pass out like this. So it is perhaps more telling of the opioid epidemic as a whole that it is now becoming this visible.
Maryland ranks among the top five states in the U.S. in opioid-related overdose deaths. It has seen a nearly 300% increase since 2010. The authorities believe pharmaceutical companies have been fueling the crisis. Maryland's attorney general has filed charges against Purdue Pharma, accusing the company of engaging in deceptive trade practices to sell highly addictive painkillers such as OxyContin.
They knew its addictive properties. And the fact is that many people became addicted to heroin because they couldn't afford OxyContin. They became addicted to certain opioid medications and switched to heroin because it was cheaper.
Maryland is just one example for how America is struggling with the epidemic. Cities and counties across the United States have filed thousands of lawsuits over the opioid crisis, targeting every facet of the healthcare industry, from drug makers to pharmacies to individual doctors. They want the industry to pay up, to recoup the cost borne by communities grappling with widespread addiction. Communities like this one in Maryland, where they desperately need help to fight the epidemic, but they also want the pharma industry to admit their wrongdoing and stop it.
DW's Alexandra van Naaman reporting there. Now, it was another exciting weekend in the Bundesliga, and Max Merrill from DW Sports is here to tell us all about it. Hey, Max. So, all these teams, top teams jostling for the top position in the Bundesliga. What happened to Schalke?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly tight at the top of the table. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Schalke in action on Sunday, going into a match on the back of four wins and one draw in the Bundesliga, had the chance to go top with a win, but they were facing hosts Hoffenheim, who last match day had beaten the reigning champions Bayern. So let's see how that all shook out.
Hoffenheim welcomed Schalke to the southwest, looking for back-to-back wins after last matchday's shock victory over Bayern. It would have to be another upset, with David Wagner's side needing just 3 points to go top after matchday 8. And Schalke went close after just 3 minutes, Daniel Caligiuri clipping the outside of the post with a sumptuous free kick. Close, but not close enough. As they did against Bayern, it was Hoffenheim who struck first, though. Alexander Nubel could only parry from Elas Bebu. Andre Komaric did the rest, 1-0 to the hosts. The Croatians' first goal of the season, arriving in the 72nd minute. And they put the game to bed in the 85th minute. Bebu racing clear of the Schalke defence before applying the finishing touch to wrap things up. Nightmare defending from Schalke, Bebu on cloud nine. 2-0 the final score. David Wagner's side halted as the Hoffenheim revival continues.
Well, yeah, and a second time in a row that Schalke have had the opportunity to go top and then basically messed it up themselves.
OK. We now have nine teams just 2 points apart at the top. What does this say about the level of the Bundesliga right now?
Well, it's definitely an exciting time to be a Bundesliga supporter. I mean, yes, as you mentioned, just 2 points separating first and ninth, and that makes it hugely competitive next to the other leagues in Europe. Let's take, for example, France, where it's 10 points, Italy 11, England 13 points separating first and ninth, which isn't that uncommon. I mean, last season, the Bundesliga had an 11-point gap at this point of the season. It does mean that there is a real lack of consistency with the top teams, but we can take a look at the table to see just how tight things are. I mean, Mönchengladbach and Wolfsburg basically leading the pack, which not a lot of people would have expected. But all those teams there, Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, Schalke, Freiburg are the exception, but even Leverkusen and Frankfurt, teams that you could conceivably see challenging at least in the top six, if not the top four. So, as I say, really exciting for Bundesliga fans, for neutrals, and for fans of these clubs who are going to see a real title race, it looks. We have a fourth of the season played. Obviously, it's early days, but a lot of teams struggling to find that extra bit of consistency. And as I mentioned, next to the other leagues, where there's a huge gap, where usually one to two, maybe three teams are really competing for the title. Right now, it's really interesting to see who will even be jostling for those top six spots by the end of the season.
OK, talking about consistency, Bayern, of course, are in that mix at the top. But I understand that all is not well in Bavaria.
No, I mean, I personally think they really made a mistake this summer in leaving it very late with signings. They had two very early defensive reinforcements that they signed that they had to. More needs must than proactive planning. And then were very slow in the transfer market and made some late moves. And now Niklas Süle, their starting centre-back, has been injured. He's got a cruciate ligament, his second cruciate ligament tear of his career. And that's really decisive for him because he's a defensive player who relies on his pace and strength. And that can really affect you as a football player, one of the worst injuries to have. The replacements for him that they have really leave a little bit to be desired for a title-winning side or a side with those ambitions. Tomorrow, on Tuesday, they're going to face Olympiacos Piraeus in the Champions League, where everything's going really well for them. But it's 2 weeks now in the Bundesliga, two match days without a win. So it's going to be a struggle for them.
Max, thank you so much. DW's Max Merrill from DW Sport. Now, Brazilian photographer Sebastião Salgado has been awarded this year's Peace Prize of the German book trade at a ceremony in Frankfurt. Salgado was recognized for his artistic commitment to the fight for social justice, as well as conservation and climate protection. His images consistently taken in black and white and featured in numerous exhibitions and books. You're watching DW News. Coming up next, we've got a documentary for you. We're going to be focusing on some of the world's best preserved dinosaur skeletons found right here in Germany. Archaeologists suspect they may have discovered a new species. And don't forget, you can get all the latest news and information around the clock on our website. That's at dw.com. I'm Terry Martin in Berlin from all of us here at DW. Thanks for watching.
Hundreds of millions of years into the past, back to the Pangaea supercontinent. The highest concentration of fossils, including early amphibians and reptiles, even relatives of Tyrannosaurus rex, is located in eastern Germany. Paleontologists continue to uncover sensational finds. Next on DW.
Dear Franz, dear Antonia, dear Cecilia. I'm sitting on the terrace in twilight. It's peaceful. My three grandchildren sleep untroubled. When I was eight, Franz's age, Germany was split in two and remained divided for decades. When your mother was born in 1969, the wall was already 8 years old. You, my grandchildren, were born after the wall fell. Born in a reunified Germany, a wonderful time, a time of great joy.
Three generations, one family, on a journey through recent German history.
darkness has fallen, it's still peaceful. May it remain so for your sakes, my dear grandchildren.
Auch für euch, meine Enkel.
The Berlin Wall, our family and us, starts November 6th on DW.